have a seat. And I need to know, is there anyone excited about being at church today?
Visit our website, nextlevelchurch.net.
Today we are continuing our series, Fighting Fear. But before we dive into the scripture, I want to give a few shout-outs. First off, I want to welcome and just say we absolutely love our military community. If you're in the military, we're so thankful that you're here today. And we just want to welcome you. So would you help me welcome our military that are here today? And because we have so many from the military, they're often here for just a couple years and then they move away. And two of our owners and their son recently moved away this year, and they're overseas. And I know he watches every week. Their whole family watches every week on online, and that's one of the reasons why we have the live stream. But I just want to let you know, we are praying for you as a church. We know what you're going through right now and all of the just scariness of the world, and that you're deployed to go help protect us. And so we just want to thank you for your service. We know that you're watching today. I want to give one more shout-out, and I want to give a shout-out to our production and to our band. Our band and production, that is the people that run the sound and the lights and the slides and all of that, they get here at like 6-something in the morning. It's like, it was still dark out. When I got here, they were already here, and literally it was dark out. I could see stars and the moon. And they get here, and they not only are here early, they do a full like run-through of the service, and then they do 2 services, and so they don't leave until after everything is done. And they are a huge part of ushering God's presence and making sure that we're ready to hear God's word. And I just wanted to say thank you to them and give them a shout out. Would you help me thank our production and band? And since we're talking about them, this is a good opportunity to just say, if you play an instrument or are interested in getting plugged in, we do have some massive needs. We had some great families who moved away to another area. And our band, since coming back from the pandemic, was already smaller. We got hit pretty hard with the pandemic. And so to lose members to move to another place, it's just tough. And so we are short team members. So if you're here and you're like, hey, you know what, I kind of play an instrument, play that cowbell, whatever it is, just if you would consider praying, thinking about it, we really could use some more people joining the team. And if you feel like that's something God's whispering to you, you can just message Jaden@nextlevelchurch.net, and he'll help get you plugged in. Well, today we're continuing our series, Fighting Fear, and I want to start things off by reading a quote, but I want to give you some context about who said this quote. Because oftentimes when you read a quote and you don't know who said it, you could be like, oh, it's easy for them to say. They haven't really lived life, or they haven't been through my experiences. And so I want to give you the backstory of the person that said this quote. Elizabeth Elliot was an amazing woman of God. She was a speaker, author, wrote multiple books. But she came on to the mainstream because her and her husband were missionaries in Ecuador. And they felt the call in their school to go overseas to Ecuador and to preach the gospel to people who had never heard of Jesus before. And they make contact with this little village, and they give them gifts, and they build relationships, and things are going great until one day, a girl from the village becomes jealous, and she spreads a lie to the rest of the villagers that these missionaries are evil and they've done something bad. So the villagers rise up, and the men who can fight rise up, and they end up attacking the missionaries, and they kill 5 men missionaries, including Elizabeth Elliot's husband. She, at the time, had just had a kid, their first child. So she's on the mission field doing the Lord's work, and now the people they're trying to reach have literally speared and killed her husband and the other 5 missionaries. Now, I don't know how you would respond to that, but I probably would go home if that was me. I would just be like, okay, God, I don't know what's up. This is unfair. This is just not right. But she doesn't go home. She ends up continually seeking out to reach this village. And she builds a relationship with them, and she ends up leading almost the entire village to Christ. And they become a Christian village, and they literally change their name and form a new identity. So when I tell you this quote, this is not from someone who hasn't lived a hard life. This is not from someone who hasn't experienced some things and gone through some things. This is someone who has dealt with scary stuff and dealt with hard things in life. So with that context, Elizabeth Elliot says this: fear arises when we imagine everything depends on us. Now, this isn't said by someone who's never dealt with fears or anxiety or worry. This is dealt with someone who literally had her husband killed while on the mission field. And fear arises when we think it all depends on us. When we think we're in control, when we think that everything, only things are going to get done if I do it. If we think everything is my responsibility, if we try to carry the weight of the world, it will overwhelm us. And we often become afraid because we think it's all up to me. I've got to do this. So then what happens is when we think that we have to do everything and everything depends on us, when a situation is bigger than something that we can control, we become afraid. So what we like to do is we like to keep life safe. We like to keep life just simple because we can control those things. The big scary things we cannot control. There's a quote by H.P. Lovecraft. He says, "The oldest and strongest emotion of mankind is fear. And the oldest and strongest kind of fear is fear of the unknown." Why are we so afraid of the unknown? Because we can't control it. We love to control things. We love to think that we are the ones that are ruling everything, that everything only gets done if I do it. And all of a sudden something unknown happens, we become afraid because it's a reminder that we're really small and we're not in control. And so often, the fear of the unknown causes us to lead with no. The fear of the unknown causes us to live a safe life and reject things, even good things. And this fear of the unknown is something that most of us didn't have to learn. We were born with it. We're born scared, fearful creatures. I remember when my kids were much younger. They were probably around the age of 3 years old. And I was making cookies in the kitchen. And I realized that they had never experienced cookie dough, raw cookie dough. Salmonella filled cookie dough, you know, the good stuff you give to kids. And so I said, "Hey, Reese and Hayden, would you like to try some cookie dough?" And they come over to the counter and they look at it and they both say, they're twins, they both say, "No, me not like cookie dough." And I said, "How do you know? You've never had it." "I just know. I just know I don't like it." "No, but this is good. You like cookies, don't you?" "Yes." "This is like cookies before they become cookies. It's good." "No, me not like it." It took me years to convince my kids to try cookie dough. Why? Because it was unknown. They never had it before. But the fear of the unknown caused them to say no to something that they actually would later come to love. And I wonder how often in our lives we're saying no to things because it's unknown, because it's scary, because we can't control it. And we're just worried, well, if I can't control it, if I can't be the one that directs that ship, then I'm just going to lead with no. I'm just going to play it. I'm going to play it safe. If you're taking notes, I encourage you to write this down. Fear leads you to waste energy worrying about outcomes no one can predict. It paralyzes you from living a worthwhile life. Fear does often protect us, but when fear becomes the primary voice that we listen to, it ends up not just protecting us, it ends up hindering us from living a worthwhile life. Not all fear is bad. Sometimes you need to listen to the voice of fear. Fear should have a say in your life, but it shouldn't have a vote. You can listen to that still small voice that says, "Run, that's dangerous." But there's also times you need to look fear in the face and say, no, you're not my master. And you're going to cause me to miss out on something really, really good. This is why in my life, I try as best as I can to lead with yes and just to do things that I've never done before, even if it scares me. I want to try a new food. I want to go visit a new place. I want to go places. And the reason that I do these little things, they seem insignificant sometimes, but the reason that I do them is because the voice of fear is so powerful in our lives. And so many of us are so accustomed to listening to the voice of fear and obeying the voice of fear that God literally could show up and speak to you and you would ignore what he has to say. You'd say, "Nope, can't do that. I can't control that. That's scary. I don't want to go there." If you were here last week, you know that we talked about the disciples and how they were literally with Jesus and a storm came upon them and they were scared for their lives. But one of them got out of the boat and he walked on water. And if you're here last week, you remember that I said, I would rather be sinking in the water with Jesus than safe in the boat. And today we're going to continue this idea by looking at another time where the disciples were in a boat and there was a storm and they were scared. And I just want to bring up last week because just because you overcome one situation doesn't mean you're going to have courage or you're no longer going to be afraid. The disciples were a bunch of guys who were afraid. They listened to fear. And you would think that the walking on water would give them the courage that the next time something scary happens, they'd be like, "Nope, we got this." But I want to show you what happens, that these guys are like literally like scared to death in the midst of the storm. And I want to give you a little bit of context for who wrote what we're going to read today. What we're going to read comes from the Gospel of Mark. There's four Gospels in the New Testament: Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Mark was not one of Jesus' 12 disciples. So Jesus asked 12 guys to come follow him. Mark wasn't one of them. But we know that Mark was around the time of Jesus. So some of the things that Mark shares about, it's because he saw it, he was there. Like, for example, this is free, this is bonus material. If you ever read Mark's gospel, there is a very random and very funny and very, like, inappropriately placed story in Mark's gospel. It's the only place that you read about this. The soldiers come to arrest Jesus. They take him off. The disciples flee, but there is a crowd that is following along Jesus, wanting to see what's going to happen to Jesus. They don't know what's going to happen. They don't know what's about to happen to him. They're just literally following along. And this crowd that's following along is some of Jesus' other followers, the other people who have walked with him, who have been around him. And Mark says, right after Jesus gets arrested, that there was a young man who was following close behind, and a soldier grabs him by the linen tunic, like the outfit he was wearing. And he holds on to it. And this person becomes so scared that he runs away and he loses his clothing and he runs away buck naked. It's in the Bible. You can read about it. And it's a very funny text, and it adds nothing to the story. Like, you're reading about it and you're like, this is suspenseful. They just arrested Jesus. What's going to happen? Why is this random naked guy in here? And a lot of scholars believe that the only reason that that little tiny tale is in the text is because Mark is saying, hey, everyone that was around, y'all know about the naked guy that ran away. That was me. It's a way of inserting himself into the text. So a lot of people believe that Mark, even though he wasn't one of the 12, he was one of Jesus' followers. Now, we know for sure, even if naked guy wasn't Mark, we know for sure that he was very close friends with Peter. We also know that at the end of Paul's life, who Paul was a primetime player, he calls for Mark and asks for Mark to come and minister to him. So Mark was around all of these things. So even if he didn't eyewitness it, he at least heard it from Peter. So this is we can trust this account. This isn't someone that's like passed down from legend or passed down from parent to parent to grandparent. This is someone who was around, who experienced the stuff of Jesus. Now, with that context, let's look at Mark chapter 4, verses 35 through 37. That day, when evening came, he said to his disciples, "Let us go over to the other side." Leaving the crowd behind, they took him along, just as he was, in the boat. There were also other boats with him. Let me stop there just for a second. Who cares if there were other boats with him? This doesn't matter, unless Mark was on one of these other boats. Could this be a way of Mark saying, hey guys, I know that you doubt all these things of Jesus, and I know you doubt these miracles, and I know you doubt all this stuff, but I was there. I was on the other boat. I saw what we're about to experience. A furious squall came up, and the waves broke over the boat so that it was nearly swamped. So the disciples leave ministry. Jesus is with them. They're on the boat. There's some other boats. We don't know who else was on the other boats. But as they're on the boats, a squall comes upon them. Squall is a very underused word in our society today. It's a fun word. Like, it's just fun to say squall. Squall. A squall. I don't really know what a squall is. We don't talk a lot about squalls. But according to the definition, a squall is either a sudden violent gust of wind, especially one bringing rain, or it's a baby or small child crying noisily and continuously. Both of those things can make men become afraid. I think context tells us that it was not a kid that was crying on the boat. I think it can tell us that it was a storm. But what's interesting about this is, if you were here last week, you heard me mention this. The guys that are on the boat are not amateurs. They're professional fishermen. They've dealt with squalls before. They've dealt with storms before. And yet a storm comes upon them and they are afraid. But remember, the text started off and it told us who was with them. Jesus is on the boat. Now, you would think that these would be guys who have said, hey, we've seen you do miracles before. We've seen you calm storms before. We've seen you walk on water. You'd think that they would be like, hey, you got this. We're just thankful you're in the boat with us. But watch what happens. Mark 4:38. Jesus was in the stern, sleeping on a cushion. The disciples woke him and said, "Teacher, don't you care if we drown?" They go to find Jesus in the boat, and Jesus is sleeping. Now, I think that this is really important because Some of us have experienced God when we've really needed him, and we feel like he's asleep. Now, the scripture says that God doesn't sleep nor slumber. We know that Jesus was the human form of God, so Jesus needed sleep. But have you ever been in a situation where you're like, okay, God, now would be a good time for you to show up. What are you doing? Hey, God, there's some big problems in this world. I'm worried about them. God, I can't control this situation. God, do you see what they just said on the news? There are some circumstances and instances in our lives where we just feel like God is distant. And I want you to know that you're not the first person who has felt like God was asleep. The disciples literally experienced it. There's a squall. Jesus, we're scared. Let's see how Jesus responds to this. Mark 4:38. Jesus was in the stern sleeping on a cushion. Disciples woke him and said, "Teacher, don't you care if we drown?" So they wake Jesus up and they ask him a question. Don't you care if we drown? One thing that I love about God is that God's big enough to handle our really stupid questions. And I think God knows we're human. And I know that most of us aren't children, you know, anymore, but a lot of us have childlike faith. We're kids, and when we become scared, we say really dumb stuff. We say things like, God, don't you care? God, don't you care that I'm going through this situation? God, don't you care? We've been praying for months. We've been praying for years. Don't you care where you're at? You asleep, God? God, don't you care that we've been asking you for a baby and we can't have one? God, don't you care that my marriage is falling apart? God, don't you care? I'm scared. God, don't you care that I'm getting ready to wrap up college and I don't have a fat clue what I'm going to do? Don't you care? God, don't you care that the world's at war? Like, this is crazy. Like, don't you care? God, don't you care that we're going through some things? We're scared. We need your help. Don't you care? The disciples are incredibly afraid. And the answer to the question, don't you care, is yes, Jesus does care. He does care. He cares more than you could ever imagine. The problem is that in the storm, we can't see what he's doing, and we realize we're not in control, and so we become afraid, so we become irrational. The question if Jesus cares is birthed out of a lack of faith. A better question to ask is, Jesus, what do you want me to do in the face of fear? Because Jesus does care. Why are you going through the storm? I don't know. Maybe it's your fault. You made some bad decisions. Maybe it's someone else's fault. They made some bad decisions. Maybe it's just because we're in a crazy, broken world and no one did anything wrong. You're just in the storm. A squall has come upon you. And the question in those moments is, God, don't you care? It's the wrong question to ask because it's wanting to put blame on God. It's wanting to play a victim and saying, God, why don't you do your job? But God is in control, not us. So when we become afraid, instead of saying, God, don't you care, we need to say, God, what do you want me to do? What do you want me to do in the face of this fear? God, I'm scared to ask for help, but what do you want me to do? You want me to go see a counselor? Okay, I'll do it. God, I'm scared. I don't know what to do. You want me to ask someone for help? I'll do it. God, I don't know how to have that conversation with them. I'm scared they're going to leave if I do it. But if that's what you want me to do, okay, I'll do it. God, what do you want me to do in the face of fear? So let's see how Jesus responds to this. Mark 4:39 through 41. Jesus got up. He rebuked the wind and said to the waves, "Quiet, be still." Then the wind died down and it was completely calm. He said to his disciples, "Why are you so afraid? Do you still have no faith?" They were terrified and asked each other, "Who is this? Even the wind and the waves obey him." So I find a lot of humor in the Bible that I don't know why other people don't find it. A lot of people just say the Bible's a boring book. It's not relevant to our lives, but I read these stories and like I think they're very engaging, very entertaining, and very funny. The story is a very true story that the disciples are on a boat. Jesus is asleep. They wake him up. They say, "Don't you care?" Jesus is like, "Hold on a second. Wind, be quiet. Shut up. Stop." And the wind is still. And then he looks at them and he says, "Why are you so afraid? Do you have no faith?" And their response to that is they're terrified. So they're terrified of the storm, and then Jesus calms the storm, and now they're terrified again. These are fearful people. And Jesus is literally like, "Hey, don't be scared," which is not helpful. Don't be afraid. That's not a helpful thing to say. I remember when I was in high school, we were forced to take a CPR class, and we had to learn all the things of CPR, and one of the things that we had to learn was the Heimlich maneuver. And the instructor, who was not a part of our school, came in, they brought him in special, and was teaching us how to do the Heimlich maneuver, and our whole class was in there, and then they said, I need a volunteer. No one wanted a volunteer, because we're all scared. No one wants to, you know, become a meme. No one wants to be in front of other people, and so we're like, nope, we don't want a volunteer. So the instructor calls someone out of the crowd, my friend David, and calls him up, and the instructor says, listen, when you're doing the Heimlich, you're to kind of push at the bottom of the stomach, and then you need to tell them to keep coughing. Because what happens often is because we're afraid when we're choking, we just stop breathing. And when you stop breathing, it's hard to get that food out. And so go behind them and start giving the Heimlich and say, keep coughing as you do the move, and it'll get the food out. And so my friend is completely nervous, and he walks up behind the person, and he's giving the Heimlich, and he says, keep choking. And we died laughing because we're like, you can't help it. That's not helpful. I am choking, so to tell me to keep choking is not helpful. And I think about that with Jesus. The disciples are literally terrified on the ship, and he's like, don't be afraid. And they're like, I am afraid. I can't help it. That's not helpful. So then Jesus is like, okay, let me just show you who is in control. You're scared because you don't know who's in control. You are trying to control a storm that you cannot control. Now watch this. Boom, storm be quiet, and the storm is quiet, and then they're afraid again. And Jesus says, hey, you have little faith. Don't you believe that I am in control? Now, this is an incredible, what Jesus does is an incredible sermon mixed with an incredible illustration. And you would think that it would be enough to cause the disciples to have great courage. And I don't know about you, but I'm thinking if I live through, okay, Jesus is asleep on the boat, we wake him up, he calms the storm, that would give me great courage. I'm going to go live my life with lots of courage and not be afraid. But what we know is that the disciples continue to be afraid, even though they saw the God of the universe control a storm. I want to fast forward to the end of Jesus' earthly ministry. And I want to show you what happens with these group of disciples. Just hearing Jesus say, don't be afraid, didn't actually give them courage. Jesus tells his disciples that he's going to die, that he's going to rise again 3 days later. And on the third day, when he's arising, when he's alive again, this is what's going on with the disciples. John 20, verse 19 says, on the evening of that first day of the week, when the disciples were together, with the doors locked for fear of the Jewish leaders, Jesus came and stood among them and said, peace be with you. So the same guys that were in the boat and saw Jesus calm the storm now have seen a guy who says, hey, I'm going to die but rise again. On the day that he's supposed to rise again, instead of being with anticipation and excitement and going to the tomb to find Jesus, where are they? They're locked in a room with the doors closed. Why? Because of fear. So Jesus, the doors are closed. Jesus morphs through the door. He doesn't unlock it. He doesn't knock. He just phases through, like, whoop, and he's there. And I love his response, peace. Peace be with you. Don't be scared. Look how the disciples respond to this. Luke 24, 37 through 34. They were startled and frightened, thinking they saw a ghost. He said to them, why are you troubled, and why did doubts rise in your minds? Look at my hands and my feet. It is I myself. Touch me and see. A ghost does not have flesh and bones, as you see I have. When he had said this, he showed them his hands and feet. And while they still did not believe it, because of joy and amazement, he asked them, do you have anything to eat here? They gave him a piece of broiled fish, and he took it and ate it in their presence. He said to them, this is what I told you while I was still with you. Everything must be fulfilled that is written about me in the law of Moses, the prophets, and the Psalms. So the disciples have experienced multiple times where Jesus tells them, do not be afraid, and yet they're still afraid. And Jesus tells them, I'm going to die, but I'm going to rise again. And they're still afraid. And they lock the doors, and they're hiding out in the safety of a house. And Jesus is like, you guys still don't get this. So he morphs through the house, and he's like, peace be with you. And they declare, it's a ghost. Well, if you were here last week, how did that work out for them? And why do they think so much about ghosts? These are perfect stories for October. Literally, Jesus appears to them. Last time they thought it was a ghost, it was Jesus. You would think someone, one of the disciples, would have been like, hey, stop saying it's a ghost, goofus. Like, that doesn't make sense. It's not a ghost. It's Jesus. But they are so terrified. They are so scared that Jesus is like, look, I'm not a ghost. I'm a man. I have a beard. You can touch it. Look at my hands. Look at my feet. These are real scars. And they literally start poking on Jesus and be like, yeah, it doesn't feel like a ghost. But they still doubt. Why? Because they're afraid. And fear causes us to doubt God. And fear causes us to doubt things that are certain. And we know, okay, yeah, God, you're in control. But right now, all I can see is a storm. All I can see is my circumstance. All I can see is my fear. And fear causes us to doubt the very presence of God. So what does Jesus do? I think this is brilliant. He doesn't give them another sermon. He doesn't give them another sermon illustration. He says, let's eat together. It was not the words, do not be afraid, that made the disciples fearless. What made them fearless was the fact that they ate with a man who rose from the grave. Can I just tell you that if fear is often controlling your life, the answer is not just to hear Jesus say, do not be afraid, because you're going to still be afraid. The answer is, let's get alone with God and dine with the God of the universe who is not scared of death. And he's not scared of death because he overcame the grave. And when you dine with the God of the universe who is not afraid of death, it gives you courage from within. I think so many of us miss out on living life because of death. We're afraid. We're afraid to lose. We're afraid of rejection. It's all a part of death. Maya Angelou says, what is fear of living? It's being preemptively afraid of dying. It is not doing what you came here to do out of timidity and spinelessness. The antidote is to take full responsibility for yourself, for the time you take up and the space you occupy. If you don't know what you're doing here, then just do some good. What I love about this quote is she says, hey, so many of us are afraid to just live. And we're not living because we're afraid of dying. We're afraid of dreaming. We're afraid of going out and looking silly. We're afraid of walking on the water. We're afraid that God isn't real. And so if we ask God a big prayer and he doesn't show up, our doubt can't handle it. So what do? We lock the doors and we stay inside and we play it safe. And we're afraid to live. The fear of dying, it is so real. And I just want to tell you that once you overcome and once you understand that there is someone that is so much bigger and stronger than death, it gives you courage. According to poll after poll that has done to ask Americans, what are the things that you fear? Poll after poll says the number one fear of Americans is speaking in public. That's the number one fear. The number two fear is death, which means people would rather die than speak in public, which I think is really funny. But even though it's number two, it's really high up on the list. We are scared to death of death. And you want to know what separates Christianity from all other religions? Is that Christianity is the thing that tells us you don't need to be afraid of death. And once you're no longer afraid of death, you no longer become afraid of men. And once you're no longer afraid of men, you're no longer afraid of living, and you can actually go out there and do something powerful for God. Look at one of the earliest letters written to some of the very first Christians, Hebrews 2. 14 through 15, says, since the children have flesh and blood, he too shared in the humanity, so that by his death he might break the power of him who holds the power of death, that is the devil, and free those who all their lives were held in slavery by the fear of death. So why did Jesus become a man to free us from the fear of death? He overcame death, death on the cross, so that we no longer have to be a slave to fear. So I want to ask you a question. And I would encourage you to write this down or at least take a picture of it. And I'd love for you to spend some time thinking about it this week. What is it that you fear most? What is it that you fear most? What is it right now in your life that you're like, yeah, I've been scared to do that? What is it? Jesus is saying to you, fear not, because I am with you. The temptation is to say, God, remove the storm. Jesus doesn't always remove the storms. But he is with us in the midst of the storms. And we can know that the same God who overcame death can overcome the situations that we're in. So what do you fear most? Jesus is saying to you, fear not, I am with you. If you would, just bow your heads and close your eyes. I want to speak to those who would say that you're maybe new to the church scene, or maybe you're new coming back. And if you're here today and you would say, hey, I don't know this God of the universe, and I am scared of death. I'm scared to know what would happen to me if I pass away. Can I just tell you that you can know that answer today? That the scriptures teach us over and over again that faith in God gives us the security we need to know that death is not the end of our story, that we can have life after death. And if you would love to know this God that overcame death, and you want to start a relationship with him, I want to ask that you just pray quietly. If you just repeat after me the words that I say, God, thank you that you overcame death. I admit that I'm scared. I admit that I'm afraid. I admit that I'm a sinner and fallen short of your standards. God, I ask in Jesus' name that you would save me. Thank you for your forgiveness. Help me to not be afraid. And help me to live for you all the days of my life. In Jesus' name, amen.
Thanks for tuning in to Next Level Church Podcast. For more information, please visit our website at nextlevelchurch.net.